Welcome to Building the Future, the Modus podcast from the RICS that brings you insight and opinion on the built environment around the world. I'm Simon Rawlinson, Chair of the RICS Knowledge and Practice Committee and member of the RICS Board. My background is in quantity surveying and project management, and I'm a partner with Arcadis, based in London. And currently I focus on market intelligence, best practice and innovation. Today I'll be speaking to Anne Gray, President of RICS, about her 12 months in the role in what has been a very significant year for the institution. Anne, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Simon. Great to be here.
And reflecting on the year that you've had, what do you think has been the biggest challenge for you during your term as president?
Well, that's a great question. And there have been a number of challenges, but I think probably to sum it up, the first half of the year in particular had to do with a lot creating, let's say, an organizational infrastructure that allowed change to occur. So we had to create panels that never existed before. We had to create, you know, terms of reference and schedules of matters reserved. We had to, you know, create job descriptions and interview candidates and, you know, put out calls for candidates. There was just all kinds of non-surveying work and, frankly, things that, you know, most surveyors probably wouldn't be that interested in. But what it allowed us to do was to create a really solid foundation for implementing the changes and reforms that we were expected to do. When I took the position of president, I said that I was assuming office at a time when, if you think about it, like remodeling your house and you tear everything down, you get it back to the studs, and that we were at a point where we could build back. And that's absolutely true. That metaphor still applies. But as every surveyor knows, when you build back, a lot of what you do just simply isn't visible for quite a while. You know, you're doing the electrical systems and the foundations and the air con and that kind of thing. So by mid-year, we were at the point where things could actually start to show. We had developed a 3-year strategic plan for the organization. We had created the world regional boards as governance bodies on their own with their own budgets and their own ability to control their own events, create their own business plans that were, you know, bespoke for their areas. We had started to hire in and seat people in post. And so it actually took us quite a while. And it's not the kind of thing that you can say in one neat sentence. So I think there was a lot of frustration on the part of members. So I think probably the biggest challenge is communicating the fact that we were doing a lot of hard work behind the scenes. And now I think the reward is starting to pay off. And you are one of those rewards, Simon. We are absolutely thrilled to have you in post. And one of the biggest complaints that I would get as president is, you know, what happened to the professional group? So I'd like to ask you the same question back. Now that you're there, tell us a little bit about your job and what you think your challenges are.
Thank you very much. And in doing so, I'm probably actually just going to remind people what KPC is, and then I can perhaps articulate what some of those challenges are. So KPC, I think, is one of the key recommendations from the Bichard Review. And I know that you were a great advocate for it before you were appointed as president. And the responsibility of the committee is primarily to develop and improve the knowledge and professional practice of surveyors, to develop the advice, best practice training and professional development materials that enable surveyors to deliver great outcomes to their clients. And then, of course, we have a lot of work associated with technical standards. So that involves a lot of close working with the Standards and Regulation Board. We've got some hard work there to get that interface working with the interim board. And we also, of course, have an external facing role where we are demonstrating knowledge, influence, helping to amplify the voice of the profession to address a lot of objectives, particularly around the public interest. So far, it's fair to say that key challenges have been getting to understand the complexities of the institution a little bit better, particularly the way in which the regulatory and non-regulatory elements operate. We are going to be putting quite a lot of effort and we're going to be building a specific group around member engagement.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm sure you've been very well received in the kind of conversations that you're having with members, where it's starting to be refreshing to actually talk about surveying again and not so much about the organization. Not that I don't love it, but it's just brilliant that we're getting to what they call the coal face of the practice and really looking at the things that matter to members and making sure that what those things are properly fed up in within our organizational structure so that policy at the governing council level can be developed around it and that we are serving members in every way.
And if I can just add to that, because I think one of my observations when I was appointed was just how much work was going on behind the scenes, particularly in the development of practice guidance and standards. Now, I'm going to turn back to you, Anne, and we talked about challenges, and I think it would perhaps be nice for you to reflect on what's the successes, what's given you most satisfaction over the past 12 months.
So without question, one of the best parts of the job from my perspective is meeting members on their home turf. When I go to conferences in, you know, Glasgow or tourist school in Northumbria, or, you know, speak at a surveyors conference in London, I meet people in the work, in their practice, hearing what is of concern to them. And they love this profession. And I have to say, to be around the people practicing it with such passion and enthusiasm and, you know, learning every day how to be better at their jobs and, you know, getting new information, I find really gratifying. One of my overarching goals for the year was that we all remember why we became surveyors. It's a really fun occupation, and we all do it in such a different way. There's such a broad range of ways to pursue the profession. And when I meet people that are having fun and are engaged, it's really satisfying for me. By extension, meeting the young people that are entering the profession. It's a much more diverse body of professionals that we can look forward to. And they are so proud of the fact that they got their credential that it's, you know, it, again, it's just a reminder that it means something to be a chartered surveyor.
Very much so. We've created a huge amount of change during the year as well. So it's a very different institutional setup that you're leaving at the end of your term than you had at the start. So that, again, you've got a great deal to be proud of there as well, haven't you?
Well, thank you. yes, actually, I am very proud of this year. It's been an effort that has been uniformly embraced by the entire organization, with very few exceptions. Everybody is really interested in making this a successful reform and kind of reading off the same sheet of music, as they say. And I love the cultural shifts that are happening. I love the enthusiasm that staff has embraced this with. And I love when members volunteer for your things like your pursuit because they love what they do and they want to give back. That's a really satisfying outcome. You know, one of the things that is of concern, I think, to members and the public in general, because one of our mandates this year has been to remember that we are at the end of the day here for the benefit of the public, making them have confidence in what we do and making them feel that a chartered surveyor is someone they can trust. When we see situations like the RAAC and Grenfell and things like that that are sort of viewed in connection with surveying and that we may have a place to weigh in on, how would your particular appointment, how do your panels, how would you be able to address that?
It's a really interesting question. And I like the way that you pose it from a point of view of it's got to be a collective response rather than a response delivered by the institution. And so, and I think this is a combination of the industries that we work in, whether that's construction or asset management, us as a profession, and are working with other professional bodies and individual members. And if I was going to reflect on some of the work that the RICS did responding to Grenfell, and that includes, say, for example, the EWS 1 form to help people to sell their flats when there was a significant doubt about the condition of them. together with work on competence schemes, for example, the one on building control, I think that demonstrates where the center of the profession, the institution, can make a distinct and valuable difference. Then we obviously need our members to apply that particular knowledge, those standards, in a proactive way. Now, the challenges that you highlighted, Grenfell, mold, rack, for example, I think they're quite different, and we need to respond to them differently. And if I was to take, for example, the skill shortage, which is probably one of the greatest challenges we face, that you could argue that that's an economy-wide and certainly an industry-wide problem. So the response to that issue is that we need to work together with other industry partners across the different sectors that we operate in built and natural environment, to make sure that those careers are as attractive as possible as a profession, that they have a high enough profile. And then in particular, I think we need to make sure that the training and accreditation is suitable and again, it's flexible enough to create the pathways that people want to go down. And then finally, of course, that as employers, that we're providing attractive and sustainable careers. So I think that illustrates that you've got what you can describe as some very well-known and very visible problems.
So that's really interesting, Simon. And I'd like to pick up on a point that you made earlier on about the skills shortage. One of the topics of conversation that I hear both sides of is, why is RICS spending time on initiatives like DEI when we should just be, you know, kind of rolling up our sleeves and get to work? And is that more, you know, for show? And I have to remind people that actually, not at all. If we have a segment of our population that is not entering the workforce for some reason, and all of the firms I know are having trouble finding qualified employees to do their surveying work, we need to be recruiting from as large a candidate pool as we possibly can. And we cannot have limitations on who and why someone will enter the profession. People that may have no legacy of surveying in their family, maybe they come from somewhere there where there is no history of surveying as a profession. We need to be getting our profession in front of people that are not the predictable candidates so that we are able to pick from the best and the brightest, whoever they may be. And that really, at the end of the day, aside from, you know, the moral upright attitudes about fairness, really everyone should be interested in getting the best candidates on board. I'm really proud this year that RICS has really doubled down on its efforts toward DEI. We've increased the budget. We've got new staff. We've appointed a chair that I've asked to report on what kind of progress is being made in that regard on behalf of the industry at large. So while RICS alone can't move the needle, we can absolutely partner with other organizations and be a resource to employers to make sure that goal is met.
You are the fourth female president of the RICS. Tina Paye is going to succeed you, which is fantastic. Though I'm going to observe that a member has challenged the recently announced membership of the KPC that only has one woman on it, which we're a little bit disappointed because that was effectively the candidates that we could select from. We didn't have the opportunity to widen that representation. Now, the recent report about women in the surveying profession highlighted that there was an issue around mid-career retention. Do you think there are things that the RICS can do more to address that particular issue? Because that seems to be probably one of the most significant D&I opportunities that we have in our hands at the moment.
Absolutely. And this is one of my own personal soapboxes is, you know, women start out in the profession and then they drop out at some point and they don't come back. So we have people that are highly educated, highly skilled, could be fabulous professionals, and we don't have a mechanism to bring them back in after, let's say, their childbearing years. The mid-career woman is a huge resource for us. If we can figure out a way that we can upskill them after they've left the profession for a number of years. You know, and increasingly, this will be the story with men as well, you know, as men take on more of the parenting duties. So I think that this idea that we can optimize the recruits that we have at every stage of their career and meet their needs wherever they're at in the arc of their career, I think is a really important thing we need to be looking at.
I think that's a really good observation, and the point that it could affect everyone rather than just one gender, I think is a point that's very well made as we do start to make different choices about the way that we organize our lives.
Yeah, absolutely.
And another development in the past 12 months is an increased emphasis, not just within the RICS, but more widely on sustainability and climate resilience. And I'd just like to have your reflections on how the RICS, under your leadership, has addressed some of these challenges over the last 12 months.
Yeah, actually, it's been quite exciting, and I love to speak about this at conferences. RICS has a number of standards and practice guidelines in place, but we are actively updating those. And the one that's the most significant right now that was released in October is our whole life carbon assessment standard, which has been expanded to include infrastructure. It marries up well with standards in other countries, and it is expected to be taken up by bodies all around the globe. So that's a huge thing for us. It was actually a two-year effort, and we had people on the very leading edge of this particular topic helping author it. So that's a really exciting development. We also have come out with the third edition of our sustainability report, which is kind of interesting because it actually measures from our members what are the obstacles to being able to fully implement sustainability measures in your practice. Is it because your clients aren't asking? Is it because you don't have the technical tools? Is it because you don't have the expertise? Is it because of, you know, local regulation that, you know, may be conflicting with something you're trying to do? So what we do is actually ask the same set of questions over a number of years and see how we can track what those challenges are. And as an industry, start to help break down some of those obstacles to full implementation. It's a really interesting study. And because now we've had it for 3 or 4 years, we can start to benchmark and really be tracking results from that. We also have, this year, we appointed a chair, Frank Avorka, who also, similar to the chair of DEI, will be reporting into Governing Council on a quarterly basis, the things that he's doing to help implement our sustainability measures all across the organization.
And he's having a big impact preparing for the COP, of course, as well, where we'll be represented as with full observer status.
Yeah, that's a real reaffirmation that RICS is a global influencer on this particular topic. So, Simon, I have a question from one of our members, and it has to do with how RICS has grown in North America and how does it plan to grow in terms of expanding its membership and recognition in global regions. I know that there's a fear that RICS might attempt to grow for growth's sake, but being from California and having some experience with the surveying profession in North America, I can tell you that there is enormous demand for the RICS credential that is just simply not being met.
It's a great question. North America is part of the Americas. There are around 3,300 members and candidates in the Americas region. And North America and Canada has about 2,000 members and 250 candidates, who are mostly specialists in construction and valuation. Now, listeners might be surprised to hear that membership has actually fallen by about 5% since 2019. And the critical element about this is member election. So actually work to improve the experience of assessors, getting more assessors dealing with issues of geography is a really important aspect of development in the region. Now, one thing I'm going to say here is that regional performance, of course, now is part of the devolved structure of post-Bichard RICS. So this is the responsibility of the Membership Services Committee and the World Regional Board. There's also a lot of ambition to put on more in-person events with a particular focus on universities and also on direct entry. So that's not really membership for membership's sake. It's recognizing that actually we can bring, you know, a wider range of candidates in. We can make the group more sustainable by attracting a wider range of candidates. Two other elements that I'd just like to highlight is a particular strategy around the 10 largest member employers. So there's a B2B as well as a B2C strategy from the point of view of engagement. And again, a lot of ambition around face-to-face events to energize member relationships, particularly across those two priority strands of construction and valuation.
That's great. And what do you see as the future of surveying as a profession? How do surveyors need to prepare to be relevant in the future?
Anna, I think it's completely in the wheelhouse of KPC. And the three elements that I think are priorities for KPC are, firstly, of course, the public interest. I think the second one then is the capability of our members to deliver great service. And then we also need to recognize that the institution has to remain competitive and relevant. So I think this forward-looking view is central to what we'll be doing. And it's certainly a habit that all KPC members are going to get very used to from a point of view of horizon scanning. The need for measurement and valuation as foundation stones for efficient markets, that's not going to be replaced. So there will always be the need for a surveying skill set. And I would highlight that there are complete new markets for those elements around measurement and valuation that we can potentially influence and access. Carbon being the obvious example with the whole life carbon assessment standard that we've recently updated. So even as we maintain key possession in the sectors we operate in, construction, retrofit, property transactions, land and minerals and valuation, I think we can be quite ambitious around scaling into these new areas. Now, that's the sort of positive bit. My next observation is that we are a profession that many of our activities are based on rules. And anybody who's been sort of, you know, looking at the development of AI and automation will know that if you have rules in place, then it's a lot easier to automate those processes than if you don't have any rules at all. So we have to recognize that digital processes are going to become more important than they are at the moment, and they are very important already. I don't take the view that we're going to get disintermediated by some kind of valuation bot as being inevitable, but I do think that as a profession, if we choose to be data-led, i.e. if we choose to make even better use of the data that we have, the process that we have, we support that using AI and automated process, I think we're going to attract more talent and we're going to attract more investment. So actually, it's beneficial for us to be on the front foot. This is an area, particularly around AI, that I'm very keen that we do move quite quickly, thinking about how we might do the kind of soft touch regulation that is anticipated in the UK and US, and also sort of bear in mind how the EU is taking its approach.
No, I think that's right. And I think we need to remember that in your capacity, you are feeding directly from practicing surveyors into the institution. And the fact that we can use your capability to inform new standards being developed and the regulation and enforcement of those standards is what gives RICS its reputation and gives the public the confidence that we are creating standards that are in the public interest. And I think all of that is kind of a basket of what the value and the relevance of RICS is in a changing world.
And as we bring our discussion a bit closer to a close, one thing I'd be interested in is the one particular sort of thing, one sort of great insight that you've learned through your interactions with members this year?
Yeah, actually, it has become very clear to me that RICS is a massive fellowship of very, very diverse practitioners, but we all share one thing. And I can parachute into almost any country in the world and find people that are surveyors that will know what I do and immediately understand at some very basic level who I am and what's important to me and be welcomed. It's just become so clear to me this year that surveyors do feel a tremendous fellowship, and they're very proud and really excited to get their organization back and on a member focus and eager to start re-engaging in at a lot of different levels.
You have had a great 2023 as president of the RICS. So what are your plans for the future?
That's a great question, Simon. Thank you. You know, I don't know. A nice warm beach somewhere in the Caribbean sounds really good right now. But one of the things that I have come to appreciate is the fact that I was able to carve out this year for RICS, and that has been my focus. And the idea that of actually taking a year of your life and saying, I'm going to do this year, not to the exception of everything else, but certainly as a primary focus, has actually, I think, made me very clear-minded, very effective, and actually allowed me to enjoy it without feelings of, you know, guilt that I'm leaving other things behind. So I'm kind of taking that forward as maybe a life lesson. Like I need to come up with a plan for 24 and see what that turns into. But I will be absolutely watching everybody and seeing how the continuation of the reforms happen. And I'm really excited for Tina. Her special skill is sustainability. And this last half of the year, we've really tried to overlap quite a bit. So you won't see a jarring shift in approach or policy. And she and I are very close in having great communication. So I expect it to be a streamlined shift.
Anna, I think your reflection on the fact your deliberate choice to block out 2023 has been demonstrated, it's had great impact. I mean, some of the changes that you've highlighted in our conversation today, some of the significant outputs of the RICS around whole life carbon, for example, I think that's very much a reflection of your commitment, your engagement with the members, and I think the particular skill sets that you represent in your professional life as well as a surveying practitioner. So thank you very much. I've really enjoyed the conversation. I've really enjoyed some of your tricky questions as well.
Thank you, Simon.
Thank you for listening to Building the Future, the MODUS podcast. Please follow us on your podcast app to stay up to date on the latest episodes from MODUS and RICS.
Thanks for listening to Building the Future, a podcast from RICS MODUS. For show notes or for more information on RICS, subscribe to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.